We've got my game.
Harrington's interesting.
That'll do.
Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
Him keeping an eye on our games, it just shows how big we're growing.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
Right, very welcome along. It's Monday morning. We are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed after quite the weekend for Irish sports. We'd love to hear from you this morning, wherever you're watching in the world. If you're celebrating or if you're angry with the fact that people are celebrating, then come on, come all. We'll have you. You can get us 0879 180 180. That's the WhatsApp number. Or, of course, you can always leave a comment on the YouTube stream. Johnny Ward is with us this morning. Johnny, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Ger.
That wasn't bad.
Wasn't bad, no. And it's... If you reflect across both sports, I was here for when the rugby was on Saturday. It's a kind of result of us changing our philosophy in terms of how we play, maybe in both sports, that we are not looking at what we can't do now, but maybe looking at what we can do in terms of changing the, if not our DNA, just being a bit more positive in how we play, particularly in the football yesterday. And this is, as Irish sporting weekends go, they don't get much better than this, even though the football was a dead rubber. I think everyone was in great form after the game last night.
It didn't feel like a dead rubber.
No.
And the tiny little ground, the 9,000 capacity ground, where the atmosphere was absolutely electric from the start.
Mm.
And, you know, it wasn't us that was doing all that. It actually sounded like the Luxembourg fans were mad into it. Gianni Infantino less into it when the camera would pan to him when he was on his phone like a teenager.
Yes.
What was he doing there?
I don't know, actually. Didn't
and who was the
guy beside him?
Yeah.
I don't know, actually. It was kind of... I didn't wrap himself up too much in that, but the game against Portugal didn't... that wasn't a dead rubber either, and it turned out to be a pretty important game for Portugal. I'm not surprised that they struggled to beat Serbia. I don't think Portugal being that great in this group, to be honest. But they kind of screwed it up, and Ireland played their part in possibly Portugal not making the World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. So far, anyway, it's not a done deal for them just yet.
Yeah.
Let's hear a little bit from Stephen Kenny. It turns out we've got a beef with Luxembourg. So we're going to hear from Luxembourg camp a little bit later on this morning. But first, here is Stephen Kenny's reaction.
Now, it wasn't necessarily the British style of football. I think obviously he's a good football coach, he's a good team there and that, you know. I don't know whether in terms of psychology he maybe needs to have a look at that side of things, you know. There's a bit of you know, his sports psychology wasn't of the highest order. I think you know, we were disappointed that he denigrated all of the great players that played for Ireland, you know. Like, all the great players that Dennis Irwin was in with us a couple of weeks ago for the squad. Dennis is a great player, like Keane. All of the players before that, John Joyce, Liam Brady, Paul McGrath, Mick McCarthy, we said. All of these players who represented Ireland, and Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, we spoke about that. Great players in the modern era. Like, it's wrong to say they just fought for second balls and just lumped it and fought for second balls and certainly and played caveman football for 100 years. That's more or less what you said, 100 years. So there's been great players before all those players played. So it's wrong to suggest that. We thought you denigrated a lot of the players, ex-players, and we didn't. That, you know, that was unacceptable. You know, that was unacceptable.
Little Luxembourg.
they roused the beast. There's the quote in Roy O'Connor's piece this morning. It's from Andy Farrell. Our traditional way as a nation, I think everyone in the Northern Hemisphere really, is about rolling your sleeves up and getting stuck in. We're better than that. We're skillful. We're able to make good decisions and play a very type of game, play whatever is in front of us. That is the truth.
Yeah.
It's when you start telling your players they're really good in all sports, express yourselves, be yourself. Then you can be the Limerick hurling team, or you can be Ireland against the All Blacks, or you can be a better version of the football team than what we've seen over the last decade.
Mm. And they're a well-coached team, Ger. I think that's the key. That, you know, a lot of the stuff they're doing now, you can see that they're well-coached. Ireland haven't been, I mean, they haven't been amazing in this group or anything. We still kind of relied on a Duffy goal from his third goal in six games. As Aidan Fitzmaurice wrote about in the Indo, we still relied on a Duffy goal to kind of break through. But other than that, I mean, Jason Knight's role in the three goals, a player who just came on, I think the game intelligence from him.
Yeah.
And, like, let's talk about the main talking point from last night. We may have the best Irish player ever on our hands here in Bazunu. Like, he is just unbelievable. Like, his save was sensational. It was like, I wonder how many keepers would even try to save that. And the save from that deflection for a 19-year-old kid who's still really developing is astonishing. And four clean sheets in a row is not to be sniffed at. We don't do that often. And I know, you know, one of the games is against Azerbaijan, one of the games is against Qatar, but Bazunu hasn't had an awful lot to do in some of those games. That was his main save last night, and we are building a solid foundation. Without Nathan Collins, without Daryl O'Shea, with a lot of, you know, a couple of changes as well over the last two games defensively, and we don't really look like conceding very much.
No, we've definitely, it seems, turned a corner, and the quality of the coaching is clear for everybody to see. Patrick McHugh on YouTube: it's so refreshing. Irish football team looked like it's turned a corner, and the Ireland rugby team were fantastic. I'm delighted for Kenny and Farrell. Both were under pressure, onwards and upwards.
Time as well, Ger. You know, it's not people. We don't allow for much time in the world now. Our attention spans aren't great. We want immediate rewards. It's 7:36. It's good. Good start to the morning. But yeah, like Kenny, it was a bad start. I presume Andy Farrell. I presume there were a lot of murmurs that you know, he could have been doing better. That Ireland were taking time to kind of find their groove. But yeah, maybe the Mycat influence is coming in.
Well, people wanted to run Mycat out of town. Mm. I was like, what's he doing?
It takes time. Like, and it certainly with Ireland, from the changes that Kenny was hoping to make in terms of how they play. Also changing to three at the back with a big kind of musical chairs in terms of the management's.
Duff walked out.
Duff is gone. Obviously, Rory Higgins is gone. Kelly is gone. I think Andy Barry could be the best thing that happened to them. Full stop. Like, and I'm speculating, but it just looks like he's all over the team the way they play.
We'll get into this now in the performance rankings. OTBAM is brought to you by Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. I'll tell you what's coming up between now and 10 o'clock. We have our performance rankings. Shane Keegan's going to join us at 8:05. Just got a glimpse. I look ridiculous. End of call at 8:30. Live from Luxembourg. Alan Quinlan at 8:40. Kelly Harrington's going to join us for the first time since she won gold at 9:05. And then we'll bring you more rugby analysis from 9:30 this morning. We'd love to hear from you. 0879 180 180. That's the WhatsApp number. Leave a comment on the YouTube stream and we'll get them. Patrick McHugh generally summing up the mood so far that everybody's pretty happy. Time for the performance rankings.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAM's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances just lacked that intensity.
Okay, so every week we run the performance rankings in association with our friends at Gillette, and you can win a Gillette starter pack. If you want to get involved, just tell us who you think should be in the red, the amber or the green. Red has had a bad weekend. Amber's like, meh. And grand sometimes, but could be better, could be better, could be worse. Green is obviously all Ireland this weekend. Green for Ireland, green for go. So what have we got? We'll start with the red. We've got Portugal. We've got Kenny's critics. We've got the Irish Rugby World Cup hopes in orange. And we've got Jason Knight and Irish Rugby in green. So Portugal in red.
I didn't put in the Kenny's critics because it is a bit of a golden cleric element, this, like, you know, because I think in general we're all Kenny fans here, aren't we, anyway?
I mean, I'm.
You're pragmatic.
I'm a disinterested,
dispassionate
yeah. observer, and I think that that doesn't mean that.
I'm to say okay. Well, the first one is Portugal.
Portugal in the red.
Portugal made a mess here because I don't know if they approached the game in Dublin as well as they should have, and there was no guarantee they were going to beat Serbia. Serbia are a good side. I think the view in the Irish camp is that Serbia have been better than Portugal over the four games. And bear in mind, Ireland over four games against Serbia and Portugal lost by a couple of goals. So, like, losing by a half a goal per game. We were very competitive in all those games, and I think we have to look at that. If the group started now, for example, like, I have no doubt but Ireland would be beating Luxembourg and Azerbaijan at home. So we'd be going into the group now really hopeful that we might nick second place. So that, I think that's fair to say. And I think we go, bear in mind, like, the Travers situation, Bazunu, and one of them, Kenny definitely got this wrong. Like, Bazunu should have started against Serbia, we can say now. But these are the mistakes you learn in the job. And Ireland got a lovely goal in that game as well. Obviously against Portugal and Faro, I think there was an element of the boy who cried wolf with Aaron Connolly, but he probably should have gotten a penalty. Adam Eda 100% should have gotten a penalty, despite having a poor game in the first half. So all of these things, in any event, Portugal put themselves under a bit of pressure now. And I was disappointed with them, Ger, in both games against Ireland. I thought they looked like a team that hasn't really played together that much, which is amazing considering the quality that they have. And fair play to Serbia. I thought they were good to watch, and they've qualified. And Portugal have a battle now.
It feels like they don't really know how to get a team from the sum of their parts. Yeah. And that's their issue. And I don't think that was just manifest in Dublin. I think it was clear in Faro, and it's been clear the whole way through that one of the bad teams had a lead on them at one point early on. Remember, we were top of the group for like 8 seconds at one stage. That was Serbia were behind the night we were ahead of Portugal. Anyway,
I actually can't remember that. Yet, anyway,
my point is that they don't seem to be particularly well managed at the moment, and it'll be interesting to see if they don't qualify for the World Cup if Ronaldo becomes player manager for the last stage of.
If he isn't already.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Bruno Fernandes has been, I don't know, he's looked well out of sorts as well. And should they, like, I thought that this is, in terms of Kenny getting a bit of luck later on in this campaign, I think he was a little bit lucky that Portugal didn't really, in horse racing parlance, they weren't off to some extent on Thursday. They didn't really care if they got a draw towards the end, I thought. And that maybe made Ireland look a bit better than they were, but they've messed it up now, and I wouldn't be banking on them winning the playoff. I wasn't that surprised that they didn't beat Serbia. And yeah, it'll be interesting.
I definitely tuned out of the playoff scenario as soon as we weren't available. Yeah. So I don't know who they're going to be playing or what.
Yeah, North Macedonia are in a playoff position. It is actually worth looking at some of the teams that got there, because there's a big narrative going on apart from the dead rubbers we've been playing. But Portugal look a team that are kind of vulnerable, and Ireland expose them. Like, we had a lot of chances in Portugal by Irish standards, and I think that was a bit of a red flag at the time as well.
Yeah, I think. So Portugal are in the red. Who else is in the red? Oh, Kenny's critics are in the red. Let's be having you. Come on. Let's see what. How do they manage to complain about what we've done now, with all the young players coming through and the clean sheets and the clear style of identity and playing better football and a full crowd? What else? What are the remaining sticks that you're trying to beat Stephen Kenny with?
I don't know if he has that many critics now. I know there have been a few people in the media who, I've been interested in reading some of the journalists in the media who've been more critical of Kenny maybe than I think is warranted. And their attitude in general has been changing now. I think they've kind of been turned around a bit. But one thing I would say about last night is a lot of what Kenny has achieved with Ireland in the last sort of one defeat in 10, there have been extenuating circumstances in a lot of those games. And even if you look at last night, Adam Eda did not play well. He should have been awarded a penalty, which changes the narrative. He goes from a 5 out of 10 to a 6 or a 7 out of 10 if he's awarded a penalty. That's nothing to do with him. But he didn't play well. And it's difficult at that level. Luxembourg weren't that bad. They've got 9 points in this group. They're not bad. They're a fairly well-coached team. It's difficult at that level when you've had Adam Eda up front, who's not getting his game for Norwich, isn't playing well for Ireland, and you still have to win a game like that. And Ireland found a way. They made changes. But it's difficult when not all your players are firing. And bear in mind, we finished the game against Portugal with Adam Eda, who's not playing for Norwich, Callum Robinson, who plays for West Brom, and a wing back in League One up front. So that's where we're at. Like, so Kenny is dealing with players that are really, you know, are doing well to be competing at this level.
And James McLean, who I think
he's been amazingly good.
So what do you put down the quality of the good performance from players who aren't playing brilliantly normally?
It's
good quality coaching.
Happy players.
It's happy players. It's everybody fully understanding what their role is within the system. Your job is to do this. If you do that, I'm going to be happy with you.
Yeah. We spoke about that Saturday, Ger. It's not. I imagine. I know sometimes for a player, he might find, you know, when I'm on international duty, this is like a renaissance for me because I can get to show what I can do. But I mean, surely Jeff Hendrick would be better if he were playing week in, week out. And like McLean coming in, I know he's playing well for his club, but his performances for Ireland the last three or four games have been like really, really good for a player that's, he doesn't have a turn of foot really anymore, and you know he's obviously getting on a bit. And generally the senior players have, and this was the question mark about Kenny. You know, he's a bit of an enigmatic character. How will Kenny? What sort of response will he get from the senior players? And they're absolutely playing out of their skin for him. And Duffy's comments after the Portugal game attest to the love that's there, I think.
Like, I know, and your point was relatively well made on Friday night, that the most important job in Irish football is actually who comes in to replace Ruud Doctor. But there is actually a really important thing happening here, and it's about the sense of identity that people who come through the Irish domestic system are going to have. If Stephen Kenny can prove to be successful at international level, then it changes the tenor of everybody who's involved in the League of Ireland. They suddenly begin to believe that they are by rights involved in football at the very highest level. It's the most senior job. That it's the most senior public-facing job. The administrative role of the technical director is not somebody we should really know in public. You shouldn't be talking that often. It should be like once every 6 months or a year, talking about what the future is and plans. But for Stephen Kenny to have come through the Irish system, it means that anybody in the League of Ireland can have faith and belief that they're within their rights to dream of getting that job. And it also nails that whole point, as you're talking about, oh, if you never played football in England, how is Seamus Coleman going to respect these people? How are any of those footballers who were born in England and who came up through the English system, how are they going to look? It's like, hang on a second. It's far better that we have somebody from our system who knows everybody and all the nuances than anybody who was parachuted in from England. It doesn't make any sense for us to do that continuously into the future. Mm. It makes no sense for us to go and spend millions on people who are not involved in Irish football and have no stake in seeing the whole thing improve.
Mm. And not only that in terms of his coaching background, but if you are... I watched it on the stream, which shouldn't be forgotten, that a lot of these games are streamed now. It's amazing kind of ability for these kids to showcase their ability. I watched Galway United, Shamrock Rovers, under-14s playing before 1,200 people in Athlone in a league final there recently. The standard was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And young Kyle Fitzgerald for Galway United, he got a goal right at the end. But I'm saying all this because Kyle Fitzgerald can now look at that game last night and say, well, Gavin Bazuna started, he's Shamrock Rovers' debut. I was actually at that game. He was playing against Bray and Shamrock Rovers really struggling at the time. He was 16. Chidozie Ogbeni was at Cork City, and then he moved on to Limerick. Seamus Coleman that you mentioned. All of these players that came through the League of Ireland, this was before the change to Brexit. So now you're looking as a young player, I can achieve a lot in this country and I can play for Ireland and my manager can come through the League of Ireland. And I think this is what you're talking about, there is a massive, massive change. I think the days of the expats declaring for Ireland are now gone. We're going to be producing players coming through. And I think as much as under-21s were a bit disappointed at the weekend, I think the underage teams are playing with a style of football that is part of that moving away from the traditional kick and rush style maybe that we were associated with. And that Ireland team got 3 goals without playing well, really, at times. They didn't play that well at times last night, but they got 3 goals and the goals were lovely goals, the second and third goal.
I think we'll talk about night in a while, but I think that we're not in a situation where we're going to dominate these games and win 7 or 8 nil. France won 8-0 last night against Kazakhstan and Kylian Mbappe scores 4 goals. We don't have those players. We're going to be under the cosh at various stages, and our ability to use the best use our resources in the best way is exactly what we've done. We have a surfeit of centre backs who actually regularly play with three at the back, and they have all blossomed in that scenario. We have a load of fullbacks and we're going to need those fullbacks, and so here's a system that works for us. We don't have that many forwards, so
That's the problem. That's where the challenge is. We need a striker to emerge, really, to get to that next level, because better teams than Luxembourg would have scored against us last night. And if we're 1-0 down, I think it would have been difficult.
Maybe. The only significant chances that they have are long-range shots. And that is definitely... Teams have obviously looked at their ability to score against us from long range, and they're going to be taking long-range shots from us. But that's not a bad thing. I mean...
No. And in fair, like over the last four games...
Apart from the Duffy mistake, obviously, where there was a good one-on-one.
Yeah, and that should have been a goal. Like, but again, I mean, that was just a stupid mistake, so I wouldn't mind that too much. But if we could get a... You know, he's waiting on one of these strikers to emerge. And you're just hoping this season that, like, we have all these under-21 players that are kind of... Troy Parrott is doing okay. If the other two are struggling at club level, Connolly and Ida, and it'd be great if one of them emerged. But there is that time now for maybe both of them to have club switches and see what happens. Because he wouldn't get, like, Ida's still showing promise, and if that penalty is given, which it should be, he'll say, "Well, I won a penalty."
Yeah,
here.
It's an assist in a way.
It's an assist, but it's an important. It was a good run, and he's quick, and that's what caused.
I think Connolly would have felt the same if he'd won a penalty and we'd gone 2-0 up. Connolly would have been like, look what I did.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely he would. Like, but it's just, and you could tell he was a bit disappointed coming off, which wasn't really warranted because he hadn't played well. But to see the game intelligence of Jason Knight at that level, I can't say I've seen him play that much. To see his game intelligence to hook the ball around rather than take on shots himself, really, really intelligent play. And he was buzzing after the game, and that's what it's all about.
He's our number 10 of the future. Because he can play centre mid and he adds an extra body there, but he's got that creativity, he's got that running, and he's got the dark arts. The little, I'm going to win a free kick here that we scored the first goal from.
There was a bit of dark arts about that, to be fair, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I want. I want a little bit of dark arts in our team.
And bear in mind as well, it's not bad to score from set pieces. Like, Duffy is so dangerous from set pieces at all levels. Like, we have a real... If we get set pieces now, I expect that we'll score fairly regularly. And that's important, because that game needed to be unlocked in some shape or form. And it was unlocked by a set piece.
Yeah, and look, it was also unlocked to the change of shape. Callum Robinson going through the middle. Officially through the middle when Ida went off was a switch as well. So let's move on. Kenny's critics in the red. Ireland's Rugby World Cup hopes. This one's a little bit of a reach, okay? So we have definitely... When the World Cup draw was made, so our group is Scotland and the Springboks. And then if we come out of our group, we face the first and second from the group that has France, who are hosting the tournament and look like they're the new Harlem Globetrotters of world sport, or the All Blacks. It was kind of like, maybe we should, you know, use this as a building World Cup. This could be our bridge to the following World Cup. Get a lot of 20-year-olds in who play in this and get that experience. So they're 24 by the time the next one rolls around. It kind of felt like, you know, knowing our history, we're screwed. But then... And at the weekend, we were so good. Like,
how good was it?
Well, the
dominant performance, thoroughly deserved, leading nearly the whole way.
The Chris Ratu, who's one of the dominant voices in New Zealand rugby, reckons it was like a 20-30 point hammering, and the New Zealand coach needs to be fired as a result of how bad they were against us, but how dominant we were as well. So. Pascal Jacob says, I'm living in New Zealand. The best thing is none of the papers referring to it as a shocking upset. Look, this is the whole point about sport, isn't it? You get carried away in the moment. You celebrate.
Are
you
they in decline?
New Zealand?
Yeah.
Don't know. I don't think so. I mean, they've lost one game all year against the Springboks. Like, they had five of the pack. They had six of the starting eight pack. Were the same six who beat the shit out of us in the World Cup 2 years ago. So, but you'd give us a bit of a chance against France or against New Zealand if we played them in a World Cup quarterfinal. It wouldn't be the we're 15-point underdogs here.
Ireland comfortably enough beats, you know, the All Blacks in terms of, like, they should have won the game. Comfortably should have won the game. So yeah, of course, the French team now, from all I know about rugby, are that's going to be amazing to see if Ireland end up playing them. They're just so good to watch. But Ireland are good to watch now, all of a sudden.
Brilliant to watch. Yeah. And France play the All Blacks this weekend, so it's a good opportunity for us to get a bit of tape on how that match will go and what our expectations are. But immediately the it's just a friendly crowd were out. Stop celebrating this win. You're getting carried away. You're too hyped up.
Like, they had a 6% strike rate against New Zealand, I think, up going into the game. As historically, Ireland have won 6% against them. It wasn't like they beat them in Chicago. They beat them the last time.
Once, yeah.
I suppose what's interesting is that it does echo the football a bit in that, now we have an English coach, but he's saying, actually, yeah, we can play a bit different here.
I think that's very important.
Mm.
It's interesting to me that our coaches are of the people. That he's a
very likable bloke.
Andy Farrell's great.
Yeah, he's like Northern English people are a lot like Irish people, to my mind, from my experience.
Yeah.
And obviously Kat is having an influence, but like just reading Rory O'Connor's report, the forwards had an amazing game, seemingly. They just dominated.
Yeah, they did. They did. And like the try that was scored at the start of the second half is actually a perfect amalgamation of the backs playing brilliantly and then the forwards hammering it over the line. It's like if you were to script a try where everybody's involved, you'd be like, actually, this looks like a 15-man game. It wasn't just... So one of the try that we got that got called back for the double movement was a set piece where the forward just exploded into New Zealand and we're like, oh, New Zealand were left. Oh, the referee saves them. But the try was scored at the start of the second half. Like, the backs swing the ball wide and they're brave with it and they take risks and they play what's in front of them. All the type of stuff that, you know, the football team are doing. And then the forwards hammered over and you're like, well, that's a good combination where your forwards are very strong and capable and brilliant. And actually, your backs are clever and they're seeing space and they're using it. So, I don't know. It's exactly what we wanted. The other thing is, one of the things that Andy Dunn has been talking about is that the Joe Schmidt style was very effective, right? Really, really effective. But it requires a very intense physical toll on the players.
Oh, yeah.
Smash, smash, smash. And then we would wonder why we get to the latter stages of the tournaments and everybody's dead. They're like, oh, there's like 16 bodies on the floor. Yeah, and they're all like injured for 6 months afterwards. Whereas with this, the intention is not to have the fight first. The intention is to have the fight at some point, but on your terms, as opposed to you're going to be a target there, constantly being broken at the rooks. And I think that's important. You know, I think it means that, you know, fingers crossed, touch wood, all that kind of stuff, that your injury profile might be less damning when you get to a quarterfinal against New Zealand next time.
What about Carberry?
Carberry comes off the bench and the first thing he has to do is have an argument with the referee about whether or not he's allowed to take the kick. Laws I didn't even understand. Mm. And then just nails the kick and nails another kick and nails another kick and one from the halfway line. You're like, I didn't know he could kick that far, really.
Yeah, that was amazing, that kick. How long can Sexton... He's 36 now.
Yeah, he seems to be in good form.
It's amazing, like, to... It didn't dawn on me that he was quite that old when I was reading the reports again. 36 and he's still like the key man, I guess. So is that going to become a narrative now where how long do Carberry has to challenge him? Like, he's had a terribly uninterrupted career.
He has, yeah. And so Carberry will start next weekend. Mm. And I think... So one of the things people were worried about was Carberry's confidence. It hasn't looked like he's back to his best just yet. I suspect playing... So Carberry's played twice against New Zealand... So maybe he's played that third game as well. So certainly he's been involved in two of the victories that we've had. And you would hope that he gets an injection of confidence from this. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't. So that's our World Cup chances have gone from being in the red to in the amber. Are we getting carried away too much? Are we going to get hammered for this, Johnny? Are we too positive about Irish rugby?
The theory is that we wouldn't be able to sustain this.
Who the hell do we think we are enjoying a victory like this? Who do we think we are, Johnny?
It was the fact that they thoroughly deserve it, though, isn't it? That it wasn't an all-out victory. It was like a dominant... Ireland were the better team pretty much of the game.
Yeah, yeah. Now, they still nearly lost. Mm. Like, there was still a few hinge points where there was a forward pass for a try that New Zealand score that put
right
New Zealand...
Death, yeah.
That put New Zealand in front with... There was still enough... I still think there was enough time for us to come back and win the game. And the way that we were playing, there should have been confidence in that. But anyway, like... You're not biting on my culture war in Irish sport. Those who like rugby and those who hate rugby.
Do people look on Joe Schmidt a bit differently now and think, you know, that was great, but we didn't play good rugby?
I think that there was definitely a school of thought at the time. But it was very successful. It was our most successful period ever.
Yeah.
It just failed at the two World Cups that it was supposed to be at. You used to hate rugby, but then you...
I know, I don't hate it, no. It's
not anymore, but you used to.
No, but like, still, like, you can't beat Ireland playing well at rugby. Like, and in fairness, under Joe Schmidt, it was fairly functional. Like, it wasn't. I mean,
yeah. Oh, we had some amazing days. We beat the All Blacks in a sensational game in Chicago. Like, we played really good rugby that day. We played really good rugby the day they beat us in one of his early games. Was it? I can't remember. Was it 13 or 14? Whenever the first one was, and then we played really good rugby, a different style when we beat them. Here, there was loads of great stuff under Joe Schmidt, like where he took what was malfunctioning and turned it into something that was consistent. It's just that the toll that you pay for that is that your players get injured over the course of a tournament. Right, let's move on. What's in green? Jason Knight's in green. Andy Farrell's in green. So Jason Knight, what would have happened if Wayne Rooney hadn't whatever he did to him in training? He would have been there for more games, and I don't know, is it just the... So we've long had this conversation on the show with Vinnie Perth about the need for a number 10 in Irish football, and it was when the team was named originally that I thought Alan Brown should have been in. What do I know? That, you know, there was definitely a change there, and like, Knight is so exciting. The age profile of him and a few others, he's getting game time all the time, and it's notable, and it's noticeable when he comes on.
Yeah, like Kenny referenced after the game, you know, being managing the under 21s, it hasn't worked out for a lot of those 21s, and the step up is obviously huge. Few of them are playing for the seniors, or few of them are doing much for the seniors from Kenny's 21, so... Ida's obviously just it's waiting to happen with him. Connolly's having a tough time. Troy Parrott's gone down a level and isn't starting for Ireland.
Bazunu, Knight, Omobamadeli.
Omobamadeli wouldn't really have played for the 21s. Bazunu, fair enough, Bazunu.
Because they were too young? Or
Omobamadeli was more of a late developer, and he's also young. Bazunu didn't start to play, fair enough, but he was also young at the time, well underage for under 21. But the midfielders, Malumbi, hasn't happened for him. So Jason Knight was come in, and it was quite stark that Wayne Rooney was giving him so much game time last season because he was so young. But then you see after the game, I think this is part of why Ireland fans are really liking this team. He's so young. Like he really looks like a kid.
20. He was 21 next February.
He had this infectious kind of like bright eyes after the game that just portrays how young he is. And as you say, the dark arts, there was a lot of game intelligence there to win the first free. And his involvement in the first two in the other two goals, I think a lot of people just don't do that. They screw that up. Even at higher levels in Ireland, they'd be selfish. He wasn't. And it just gives us another option because he's that was a real revelation of performance.
Yeah, and look, I haven't seen enough of the 90 minutes of it, but I'm given to understand that he could equally play in the Josh Cullen role, or he could play in the Jeff Hendrick role, and now he can play as like a link between our forwards and our midfield. So
he's 19, like, so it's, you know, these positions.
20.
He's which?
He's 20.
20 even, sorry. These positions are fluid. So it's like, do you know what I mean? Ireland were overrun at times last night. When they played the two lads in midfield with three up top, like at times they are stretched. And that's the benefit of having five at the back, in that there will be cover there. There will be a body in the way. But, you know, you need to be fluid in these positions. And like just to mention Jeff Hendrick as well. Jeff Hendrick's ball for the second goal. And this is what I like about it, because Kenny doesn't mind his players kind of making mistakes, and he's like, "Don't worry about it. We, you know, if that didn't work out, you can immediately change the situation." Jeff Hendrick, there was a simple ball through, and it would have, I can't remember who it was, but Hendrick just needed to play it long, and we were in. He didn't. He played the wrong ball out to the right, but Ogbeni then won it back. So Hendrick having, and nobody really called this at the time, but Hendrick made the wrong decision. He didn't look up properly and so on and so forth. But like Benny won the ball back, and then he plays this beautiful ball in, and we score a second goal. And I think Hendrick's performances, this is the best he's played since 2016, you know.
Yeah, it's what we thought we were going to get after 2016. And
that's Stephen Kenny. That is Stephen Kenny. These players for other Irish managers went missing in games, and that is down to Stephen Kenny 100%.
I don't know, like you can't be giving him the credit for that, though. That's like, oh, he only sees him for sure. I think, come on, he gets no credit from people for stuff. But I think it's clear that Kenny's influence on these players having confidence, and look, the importance of the confidence as well. Like, I think if they were to get a 1-0 lead like they did against Portugal now in Faro, they'd be much better, because that was a team that was completely shorn of confidence. And
yeah,
then, and they needed the break of the penalty save. Like, that's a big sliding doors moment in this whole thing, where Bazunu saves the penalty.
Oh.
And like, I don't know, there's strength and depth. I mean, it's not amazing strength and depth, but there is some strength and depth all of a sudden that they've established over the period of
And I'd like to think, Ger, as well, in games that when we are fortunate enough to take the lead, and I think this will be a big break for people who watched Ireland over the years, when Ireland take the lead against decent teams now, you'll notice that Kenny will go for the jugular. He's going to try to stretch the defence of the opposition rather than what we have, we hold. But we just need those emergence of, we need one of these strikers to come through. That could be the next step, because we're still winning games without strikers really at the moment. We just, Callum Robinson's doing okay, but you know, we are struggling in that area still, and I think that's testament to the Irish team that we found a way to win.
All right, we've already talked about Andy Farrell, who's in the green as well, but certainly he has he's taken that job and run with it, and is the very best expression of everything that we wanted from Irish rugby, where we have forward strength, we have some strength and depth, we have, he seems not to care about any of the stuff that was seemed to have been important before. He just picked his team, sent them out there, made some changes, backed his guys the whole way through, his support of Jameson Gibson Park and James Lowe in particular. Did you see the James Lowe interview afterwards, where he was like, "You bollocks has always given me grief about my day."
His defence, yeah.
But he called the presenter "you bollocks" on Channel 4.
He seems a bit of a character, to be fair.
A lot of love for him in the crowd. And Bundiaki, the love that the crowd had for Bundiaki in the stadium was intense.
Johnny Sexton's kid in his arms after the game, nice moment.
It was all very nice, yeah.
Sounded like an amazing atmosphere, to be fair.
I saw people giving out about the fact that they did a lap. It's like the first full stadium in 2.5 years. You know, we're thanking everybody for sticking with us through these difficult times, and we've come out the other side and we're celebrating because we just won a big game. Are we not allowed? When Liverpool win a big game, at the end of it, what do? He sends them over to the Kop after a league match. So they'll be Palace or whoever. And they'll go over to the Kop and they'll be like, "Yeah, because you're the fans and we're the players and we're in this together."
Big fan of hurling Klopp, as it turns out.
Was he?
I think the Myler spoke about it in the book.
Right.
Klopp is fascinated by hurling, yeah. Right, this is something that...
You should get him on for his analysis of the draw in Tipperary and the fallout from that. We'll get into that later on this week. But anyway, that is this week's performance rankings.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
Shane Keegan's on standby. We'll get to him next.
OTB AM.
Be brilliant. Just be brilliant. No, I think he was coming on... Obviously, two shifts. Obviously, one he had to, in possession, had to play on the left side of our attack, and out of possession had to sort of get, you know, defensively had to get Mark Martins, their holding midfield player. So we pressed with the front two and had him as our number 10 behind that, out of possession. But in possession, he obviously operated off the left flank, and so he had a tactical. He could take some information on very quickly. Like, and I just said, as one of the advantages of being sort of under 21 manager is that you sort of learn about the character of the players. And Jason has terrific character. He was unfortunate with his injury that held him back a little bit, or considerably, for a while. But he was going to come on early in the Portugal game. We had, you know, considered bringing him on early in the second half of that game, and. I know that we had other options and that, but I think he's a terrific little player, Jason. Like, he's buckets of courage, and he's just a breath of fresh air around the place as well.
Yeah, it's Jason Knight. Interesting to have a manager explain exactly what the role of the player is as well, as opposed to some of the previous managers who would have just been batting away those questions and telling us nothing. Shane Keegan, good morning to you. How are you?
That's how you keeping?
Yeah, pretty good. This was exactly what we wanted. There's going to be not in a straight line, but there's going to be signs of progress, and Ireland with the ball and Ireland without the ball look like they're pretty well coached at the moment. What was your takeaway from the two games, not just the Luxembourg game? Because obviously we have to look at these as a piece, and it seems like there are definite patterns emerging. What were you seeing?
Yeah, look, I think we were better in the first one than we were in the second one, obviously. That said, all's well that ends well in terms of how last night was. I thought we were superbly impressive against Portugal. I really, really did. We were so, so brave, Ger. I mean, in terms of their positioning without the ball, to go up against a side as strong as Portugal and literally decide to go man for man, in terms of our marking, like any time the keeper had the ball at his feet, we were gone 7v7 in the attacking half of the field, leaving the three centre halves man for man. It's high risk, but it was working really, really well. It's the lesser of two evils, I suppose. You can drop off and take the safety first approach and let them have it all day. But Stephen obviously said to the lads, no, look, we're and that surprised me, because you look back at our possession stats against Azerbaijan, even when the result was good, and we kind of did let them have it. So I assumed it would be more of the same, but we were incredibly proactive without the ball and forcing them to go along. But to be fair, then, the way the bodies flooded back, when we did force Portugal to go along and it was sent into the air, the bodies had flooded back to make sure that players, so they weren't left 3v3 for too long. But the initial setup was very much kind of man for man, which, as I say, is very, very brave. And then in terms of being in possession of the ball, the constant looking to play out from the back. Seamus Coleman in particular with Josh Cullen out there, the amount of times those two guys found each other to get us out of trouble. And all of a sudden, because we were trying to play out from the back, that means Portugal now have to send bodies into the attacking half, something that teams probably never had to think about doing against us before. And that means, again, there's space on the counter-attack. And we just looked really, really good then when we got it out of those congested areas and broke forward.
That's the thing as well, Joris. It's pace. Like we don't have top strikers at all, Shane, do we? But if you are playing a system where they are going to press you high, you have that out ball then for the pace that the lads have up front, and that's something I guess he's working on.
Yeah, definitely. And look, I think Ida was off the pace last night, but I thought he did really well when he came on. Like, if you look at the Portuguese game, we were good without the ball for pretty much the whole game, I thought. In terms of with the ball, it was really the final third of the game. For the first hour, we were only so-so. That last half an hour was when we really, really came to life against Portugal, and that kind of coincided with Ida actually coming on and the slight change around.
That's an important point here, because actually what the narrative is, we only got good when they went down to 10 men, but they went down to 10 men because we put them under pressure, and actually Danilo had been booked before that. So you're making the point that the change had actually occurred before that, and the red card and the yellow card actually were a result of our good play.
Definitely. And to be, again, Ger, to be honest, I had thought that he would go with Callum Robinson up top, and I started to weigh up how we'd set up, and the fact that Robinson needs to be allowed to go do his own thing. I don't think he could have been allowed to do that in the slightly more withdrawn role. So I kind of surmised that he would end up playing centre forward for those reasons, and I thought that was the right move. But when Ida came on the field, it changed things massively. There was like three balls, I think, in the first 8-9 minutes of him coming on the field where he just did what he does, which is he got his arse out, he held the centre back off with his arse, he controlled the ball in, he set it back to somebody else who was then able to release an Ogbene or whoever else, Callum Robinson or whoever it was coming from deeper. And obviously that's not Robinson's game, so he hadn't been given us that option. So I thought he was not quite to the same extent as Knight last night, but I thought he was quite the game changer the other night, yeah.
That's really interesting, because it means from the manager's perspective that actually in game he has options now all of a sudden. Like, I always thought Ogbeni would actually be a better sub, but his two starts have been excellent, and the first 10 minutes I thought maybe it was a bit too much for him in the Portugal game, but then he really grew into the match, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, so that changes how you can play, because it means that anytime Matt Doherty wants to ping one forward, he can do that. And all of a sudden, as you talked about, the defence needs to go, oh, do we press up here, or are they going to ping long, intelligent balls over us? And that just puts doubt in teams' minds when they're playing against us.
Look, it's going to be so exciting next year, because it absolutely is going to be a case of horses for courses, without a doubt. I mean, there's people, I heard you chatting there just before I came on, and there are players who at the moment look like they've dropped out of the picture, who I bet you, I'm telling you, like, Stephen doesn't just disregard players like that. Players that are out of the picture will come back into the picture as well. And they'll regain their form with their clubs, and that'll help them push on as and challenge for spots again. So depending on who we've got and the different stages we're at next year, you're going to have those players who we've seen do so well over the last few games. Jamie McGrath didn't do as well against Portugal as he had done previously. He'll re-emerge without a doubt. So he will. And the likes of, I do think the likes of your Troy Parrotts and your Aaron Connolly's will come again. If you've got all these options, that's a really, really good thing. And I think Benne was selected for a very, very specific job the other night. I think if Stephen wrote down his starting 11 for the Luxembourg game before the Portugal game was played, I don't think Benne was in it. I think he was just particularly selected for the game against Portugal because it really, really suited his skill set, suited the job that was needed. He was so good against Portugal that he then made himself undroppable. And I think that's how he ended up in the team for the second one, which is exactly what the young fella should be trying to do. But I just think we're going to have a lot of options depending on what Stephen requires from game to game next season.
Shane's point is a key one there, that this is Stephen Kenny, that these guys that are on the periphery of the team or the squad, Kenny will make sure that they feel loved, that he knows that they're in his thoughts over the next few months. He'll be in constant contact with them, checking how they are. That's kind of him, Shane, isn't it? Like, that he just has this man management style where it's sincere. It's also, you know, he's quite tactical at times. I think referencing Mick McCarthy after the game as one of Ireland's great players was certainly one of his more out there. He was playing tactics there. But in terms of what he does with players, I think, and we spoke about this myself and Ger this morning, it's like a lot of them are just playing for him, and players who weren't playing very well for Ireland before he came in are now playing really well.
Look, lads, if you want to draw, not blank expressions, but if you want to force somebody into a stuttering answer, when you talk to players who've played under Stephen and you say to them, what is he so good at? What is it that makes him so different and makes him so special? They're not able to answer the question. I was trying to plough, when I was at Dundalk, I was trying to plough the players. Naturally enough, you're trying to find out, you know, what did he do on the training ground, or what way did he talk to you, or what, you know, what did he do? You're just trying to figure, see can you learn a few things from the way he operated. Players are never able to fluently answer that question. They don't know themselves how he has done what he does or what it is that makes him that bit different. But they will inevitably circle back to saying, I don't know, he just has a way of making you feel great about yourself. He just has a way of making you feel 10 foot tall. And that's not to say he doesn't have lots of other attributes, but that is definitely the key one. And yeah, those energies to make people feel like that are not just focused on 1 to 11. He will absolutely be trying to have that effect on as many people around the setup as he can.
Oh, and he was talking about John Egan as a Champions League defender. You can see that's what he's doing. When he answered
totally unprompted.
But the question he was asked that we played the clip earlier on was him about Knight, and, you know, what instructions was be brilliant, like, you know, be your brilliant self. Like, that's the type of thing that gives a 20-year-old going, oh, okay, Ireland manager thinks I'm brilliant. Well, maybe I am brilliant. I want to play you this because there's been a bit of back and forth with the Luxembourg manager. Here he is, Luke Holtz, and his translator. He wasn't happy with the conduct of the Irish management team last night, but he wouldn't say why. Oh, we don't have the clip. Sorry, we'll get into that in a minute. Let's talk about Knight, because we've been fascinated slash obsessed mildly with the number 10 role on this show since Finney Perth has been talking to us about it over the last 18 months or so. Is Jason Knight our number 10? Certainly that's the job out of possession, is be our number 10. But in possession too, can he be that player?
Yeah, look, he's another one who can go and challenge for it, that's for sure. I mean, it's hard to believe that a player could have just as much of a positive impact as he had last night. You really, really couldn't have asked any more from him. And it was interesting to hear Stephen describe the job, because I did think we struggled a little bit more last night in our build-up phase. I thought that front three had just changed their permutation slightly, whereas I would have up until now been calling it a 2 and a 1. I think it was a 1 and a 2 last night with Robinson as the 1 behind Agbene and Ida as the 2. Now, Callum Robinson's to me, Callum Robinson's biggest attribute above all else is I just find his movement to be absolutely outstanding and his ability to go wandering into certain areas to be outstanding. But when he's one of the two, or even when he's the centre forward, his designated marker, he goes into areas that his designated marker can't follow him into because he's going from the left-hand side of the field all the way across to the right and vice versa. Last night, as the out-and-out 10, I just thought it allowed their six, Martins, to pretty much lock onto him and kind of man-mark him a little bit more. And I thought that caused us a big, big problem. Now, based on what Stephen said there, you're to be on the left when we have it and go in and mark Martins when we don't have it. I think there actually was a slight adjustment to the shape when Knight came on as well. So, and I think that really, really helped as well, so it did, because I don't think now any particular player could go and man-mark him. By God, he flourished in it. I mean, he really, really did. Look, there's been so much talk, as you say. He's such a high-energy player. He's so, so clever. He's getting praise from, you know, so many kind of top directions. He was excellent. He really, really was excellent. But he's going to have a fight in his hands because we've got a lot of strong players in that position. And, you know, what he needs now is regular game time that he can really try and go and emerge and push on. Look, I wouldn't be getting overly carried away. It was a short period of time. If you want to get carried away about anybody, Gerard, for me, all day long, it's Josh Cullen. I just can't get over how good this player is becoming. I wanted to put my fist through the screen last night at halftime when Liam Brady started saying that he wasn't showing for the ball enough. I thought it was anything but the truth. Anything but the truth. He has to be a dream teammate for everybody else. If you're a wing back and you're going running down the line and all of a sudden you've got box down the tunnel, You just know when you turn back out, he's going to be there. He's going to be there every single time. He had like 61 passes from 64 attempted last night. I think it was about 20 ahead of the next best in terms of, well, a couple of the centre backs had decent enough numbers, but he is always an option. He uses the ball so well. His movement is so, so clever. Now, part of that is the setup as well is really, really helping him. Like, if you see last night, let's say we go down the left with James McLean and James runs down a dark alley, he'll turn back and Cullen will be there every time. Mm. But when he plays it back to Cullen, Cullen is then switching it across to the other side. But we're in the final third at this stage, and the player he's switching it across to on the other side is Seamus Coleman, who's one of our centre halves, yet he's in the final third stepping into that space that we've created down the opposite side and showing for the ball. And the exact same the other way around. Matt Doherty, you're stuck down the tunnel, just come back to me, Josh Cullen, I'll receive it and I'll switch it out the other side to John Egan, who's well positioned in the final third to take the ball forward. So the setup helps him, but I just think his intelligence is, I know we need to get away from talking about the other fella, but like, there are serious similarities between himself and Declan Rice there at the moment. There really, really is, in the manner that he's playing, and I think he's the one that we need to get so excited about at the moment.
Okay, that's great to hear. And that general sense of everybody beginning to know, not beginning, but us understanding that they understand their roles, that has come at the end of a lot of games and a lot of chopping and changing and all the COVID stuff that we all know about at the start. But it feels like we have a very settled style of play and we have strength and depth for most of the positions. Like when you're talking there about Coleman, he was playing centre-back and played centre-back over this period of games. He's been absent because of injuries for various stages, and like, it wouldn't be a significant downgrade if we had Dara Shea or Omobama Deli in that back three. And it kind of feels like whatever constellation there is now, maybe with the exception of Cullen, that almost everybody can be replaced by somebody of a fairly similar stature. Maybe Shane Duffy at this point is making himself irreplaceable. But apart from that, you feel like we'll be able to withstand the vagaries of a qualifying campaign because enough players have had enough time and exposure in the system.
Yeah, I'd agree with that 100%. And I would actually say even the two that you've named, I think, you know, for all the praise I've just given Josh Cullen, I think Conor Horan would absolutely relish, you know, being told, you know, Josh Cullen's picked up an injury. You've seen what he's been doing for us the last few games. You need to go and do that for us now. You need to be on the ball 60 times in the game. And I think he would absolutely embrace that as well. And Duffy, let's be honest, was absolutely nowhere near his best last night.
Yeah.
Until the point that he got the goal. I'd say he would be very, very disappointed in the game that he was having up until the point that he got the goal. So I do. It's not to say that... I would say possibly for me, it might be Matt Doherty. I think as a right back, I think Seamus Coleman is a very different kind of a right back. I think Matt Doherty is the one who I don't know if we've got a like for like in terms of skill set at the moment. But yeah, all over the field, you feel like you've got a minimum of two options for any given position. It's taken a while to get there. I do think COVID is a very, very valid excuse for why it's taken so long to get there. But what we're seeing at the moment is what a lot of us would have felt we were likely to see back when he got the job. It's taken longer to happen, but we've got there. And look, again, that's not to get over carried away, Ger. I'm not saying we're world beaters or anything, far from it, but
Shane,
the general
say,
vibe.
Four games, right? Four games playing against mixed opposition. Really didn't concede that many chances over the four games. I was just reflecting on this last night. If you put a team out and you're playing sort of five at the back, three at the back, whatever you want to call it, but the strength is, you know, the strength of particularly the three centre backs and generally the back six is so good. And then if you think mentally what that's like as a defender to have Gavin Bazunu behind you, who himself is still only really getting going, you're like, we've an extremely strong bedrock here to get, like, even to eke out nil-all draws in games that might be tight, like the Portugal game. We have a serious foundation here now, because Bazunu could be, like, he's going to be the best goalkeeper we've ever had, I think. You know, he could be the best player we ever had. But, like, The understanding there that we go out here, we're not going to give goals away at all willy nilly, must be massive for them.
Yeah. Look, I don't know. Have I ever seen a better save than that one last night? That really was
That's true. It was unbelievable, Shane. Like,
it is right up there as one of the best. Certainly one of the best I have ever seen. I mean, if that's a high-profile game or a high-profile goalkeeper, that gets shown around the world, you know, time and time again. So it does. It was superb. And he can do that. He's shown consistently now that he can do that. And also, as we've seen, just so comfortable with the ball at his feet. So comfortable. And you know, again, this whole style of play essentially could fall down if you had a goalkeeper who wasn't comfortable with the ball at his feet. But thankfully, we seem to have, you know, again, I wouldn't even say Bazunu is irreplaceable. He's been fantastic. But we do seem to have a couple of keepers emerging there. I don't know if you saw Brian Maher's performance for the 21s the other night as well. Again, extremely comfortable with the ball at his feet.
Sean keeps two clean sheets against Galway United lately.
True, Johnny. Unfortunately for you. Look, it really is, because that's Bazunu as well. As the every time he has the ball in his hands, he runs out, immediately runs out towards the edge of the 18-yard box. He's scanning as he's running out to see what options are on, and if there's any sort of a quick release option on, bang, he does it instantly. If there isn't, grand, take a deep breath and relax. So I think he's the catalyst for a lot of the positive stuff that's going on as well. But yeah, just another reason for us to be
briefly, sorry, Shane, I know the Ronaldo save, like, went viral and all of that, but that had to be one of those moments as a sport fan in Ireland or as an Irish soccer fan where you're like, holy crap, this guy is just, he's different. He's just, you're witnessing, like, in all the goalkeepers we've seen down the years, this guy is just, he's from another planet, I think.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, when a player breaks into a first team, a goalkeeper in particular, you know, you'll get away with chancing a forward at first team football quite young a lot easier. But when a goalkeeper breaks into a first team as young as he did at Shamrock Rovers, you do start to look and go, what's going on here, kind of a thing. All right.
He could be Ireland's goalkeeper for 20 years. Mm. Like, he could be Ireland's, you know, he's that right age that actually he could literally play football for the Republic of Ireland for the next 20 years, and we'd be sitting here in 20 years time, hopefully, on whatever format people are maybe in each other's brains going, oh, that Bazunu, we predicted this.
Mm.
and you know what, Gerald, he's going to have to stay on the top of his game. He is going to have to stay on the top of his game, because, you know, how amazing is it for us to have a backup goalkeeper who's at Liverpool and threatening to try and break in there? So it's amazing. But look, he's outstanding, lads. It was go gadget arm stuff, wasn't it? I still can't really wrap my head around how we pulled off that save, to be honest with you. It was just sensational.
Good stuff, Shane. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Spot on, lads.
That's Shane Keegan giving us his thoughts on the Republic of Ireland scenario. I totally agree that if the group was starting now, says Jared, we'd have a right good chance. We'd all beat Luxembourg and Azerbaijan home and away, and the games between the top three would all be close. Well, we'll see. The Nations League is all of a sudden very interesting to us. We're like, and I think the stadium will be full for games, and I think there's a feel good factor around the team.
Sponsor is the big one now. I mean, the FEI, like, they've got to be in a far better bargaining position. I can't get my head around how somebody isn't.
Just one point on that, right?
Yeah.
The Brady line about, if I was running a business, I'd get all the evidence available. Oh, where's he going to go? The Dublin taxi driver told me, he made the joke about Man. I don't know if you saw this in the Late Late Show on Friday night. I flicked over at the end of something else and was like, oh, I watched this. And Brady using the wisdom of the Dublin taxi drivers to
Brady
go.
Was on the Late Late.
He was, yeah. Yeah.
Brady's been on TV a lot lately then.
And his point was, he's not going to Man United, is he, Stephen Kenny? A bit cruel. It's like, okay, well, that's fine. If that's where we're getting our analysis from these days, that's great. But if you are running a business, you want stability and certainty. And if you're the sponsor, you want to know who the manager is going to be for the next 2 years. Mm. So you frank the contract now, and we stop talking about it and we move on. And that's exactly what a good business would do. So this is a challenge for the FAI to see if they're well run, or if they're still in a state of flux. And if they're well run, they'll go, this is our guy, this is our team, that's our stadium. Those away fans, the away fans were singing that they wanted Stephen Kenny. And the away fans always know, because they're the ones who are investing the most time and energy and reading non-stop about what's happening, and they were fully behind him. So get the deal done. Philip Nolan says, delighted for Kenny. First half save from Bazunu was unreal. Right, I want to play you this, okay? This is the Luxembourg manager, Luke Hultz, and his translator. He wasn't happy with the conduct of the Irish management team last night. Wouldn't exactly say why. Have a look.
Coaches wants to say to Zep that he's very disappointed about the behaviour of the staff of Ireland. This evening they came and made the played the big guys because they were winning. In Ireland, where we were winning, they immediately disappeared in the dressing rooms and we didn't went to them and made them ridiculous, but they tried to do that this evening after the match, and that's not very fair play and very disappointing. So we are not used to that of British teams. Normally they should not behave like that.
Do you realise that Ireland is not a British team? And secondly, what in particular happened tonight?
Some of teams from the Ireland.
Different place. But secondly, do you realise what specifically happened tonight?
No, we should ask. No.
It's like saying Luxembourg.
No, everything is safe about that.
Sorry, so what, can we clarify what happened?
No, they behaved very unsportive after the match. And
did they not shake your hand, or was there what specific
act
was unsportsmanlike?
How to say it in they did not behave as a sportsman. Okay.
Can you be specific?
No, that's enough to the question. Next question, please.
It sounds like an excuse.
Not an excuse. It's a fact that
it's
a constatation. Yeah.
Sorry, did Kenny shake your hand after the match?
She gives you a shot. That was an English.
Well, an English. Okay.
So nicht mit dem Thema. Schon das gesagt.
Okay, next question.
Das ging nicht so gut. Was für ein Tag ist das?
Yeah.
Okay, you probably.
You have another question?
No, I just said you brought this up.
Yeah.
We're following up on.
Wow.
That was hilarious.
That was class.
The poor old interpreter was like, am I answering the questions here? Because they just kept lashing it back at him like, what are you saying? Oh my God.
The interpreter seemed to have like, oh, I mean.
He did wear probably the finest.
The coat.
The coat I've ever seen anywhere. It was just.
Sheepskin.
I was almost. Weird. I was willing them, like, if they were playing anyone else, to have a good performance on the night.
I wish he'd rocked up to the post match press conference. End is with us, I think. End, good morning.
Yeah.
Well, you were there for that. What was that like?
I was. It was actually. It was pretty hilarious. It was a weird press conference. It was very tense from the very get go. Luke Hultz came out. He was not a happy man at the end of the game. First off, the first question, he blamed the referee. He said that the referee would not allow them to win the game because, firstly, Shane Duffy was offside for his goal. He feels that Luxembourg should have had a penalty somewhere. Not sure where he got that.
That was the handball in the first half.
It must have been that. And then he was disappointed with the goal that was disallowed as well. He said that that should not have been disallowed. Secondly, in the press conference, he then went on to throw more shade at Ireland, saying that there's not much justice in the world of football, but there is some justice in Portugal finishing second in the group after playing a B team against Ireland on Thursday night. And then that happened. I guess the funniest part of that was probably the back and forth with the Irish journalists, who almost seemed to be defending the pride of the Irish nation in the fact that Luke Holtz did not know that Ireland was not part of Britain. I think his British football comments actually came from a place where he actually genuinely thought that Ireland was still part of Britain.
I know.
To which one of the Irish journalists said, it's like saying that Luxembourg is part of Belgium.
That sounded like Gavin Comiskey.
Yes, I believe it was Gavin Comiskey.
I don't think was it not the translator who was like same part of the world, kind of those islands? Was he not trying to do he must have had one of those British school atlases that had British Isles over this whole kind of part.
Yeah, I presume it was something like that, yeah.
All joking aside, though, we are, you know, just the thing, and we are trying, this is the time where we're moving away from being the you know, basically another leg of the British football system where all our players went over there. This is now changing, and, you know, we're sending players to the continent, and maybe we're finally playing like a team that's developing its own identity here.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole thing about British football is almost an outdated concept in general, Johnny, because, I mean, what is British football since the 1990s? It's not lump it up to the tall forward to knock it down. England have not played that style of football for at least a decade, if not more.
They always had the plan B, Scotland. Crouchy, though. That was there was always a bang it forward, and the centre-backs would always, when they were chasing the World Cup round of last 16 or trying to get out of a group desperately and flailing about, they would always lump it up to the last 5 minutes. But I think you're right. English football is now actually a bunch of small, diminutive forwards who find pockets of space and kill you.
Yeah, and if you look at the England team, I mean, it's got some of the best number 10s and attacking midfielders in the world. They've got, you know, Jack Grealish, Mason Mount, Phil Foden. All these players are really talented footballing players. And granted, Gareth Southgate isn't the greatest tactician in the world or play Pep Guardiola style football, but I mean, they've got a really good team coming along there. But I guess if you're talking about the Irish side, last night they didn't really play all that well, and for a large part of the game you're almost thinking to yourself, well, maybe Luke Holtz was right here, because they were going long a bit more. But Stephen Kenny clarified after the game that it was a tactic to try getting behind them, because last time when Luxembourg beat Ireland, they were too obsessed with trying to play out from back. They got caught in the ball too many times. The Luxembourg press is quite good. I was like, in the game last night in the first half, first 10-15 minutes, Ireland could barely get out of their final third, because Luxembourg, they were just pressing high. They were really good at it as well. So they had to go long to Ogbeni. They had to go long to Adamina. And it didn't really stick. It wasn't until Ireland moved away from that in the second half and started to get on the ball more, started to compress and then fire out to the wings, that they started to really get some good advantage and good possession and start creating chances against that Luxembourg side.
He might have been on the button when he said, like, in the game in Dublin, you know, and I don't know if many of us remember exactly what went on after the game there, but maybe he felt that their shock 1-0 win, which was really the low point for Irish football for some time, or certainly this campaign, maybe he felt that Kenny and the lads didn't kind of embrace him enough, or didn't, you know, they weren't nice enough after the game. But it's interesting to think back to that, Inda, because I was reading recently that Stephen Kenny, apparently after the press conference was over that night, was kind of just almost looking into the distance in the whilst all the journalists had gone. And it was like, that was my one moment in this campaign where I remember as they were going off the pitch, I was really worried as to what Stephen Kenny would be like in the dressing room afterwards, because I didn't know what he could say to make that any better.
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, just to bring it back to the Luke Holtz stuff, a Luxembourg journalist explained to the Irish press that essentially what Luke Holtz was trying to say was, in Ireland, when Luxembourg won, they won graciously. They shook everyone's hand. And Ireland, he basically said Ireland just retreated to the dressing room straight after the game. Whereas down in Luxembourg, when Ireland won, Ireland were out on the pitch celebrating and Stephen Kenny was giving it the big one. That was essentially the crux of his point. But the British comments did get under Stephen Kenny's skin. He even said in the press conference afterwards that he spoke to the players about it. And you just played the clip earlier on where he lists off an incredible list of names, it has to be said, of Irish players that were downgraded by the Lacolds.
Where did he get Mick McCarthy from?
Very specifically, I would say very specifically picked, Johnny. You know, there's
Robbie Keane being mentioned. You can say that Robbie Keane is like that. Robbie Keane is 100% tactical, but at the same time, he was one of our better players. Liam Brady, absolutely. Mick McCarthy.
Honestly, if Martin O'Neill wasn't in there at one point in time, even though he didn't play for Ireland, I wouldn't have been surprised. It was Paul McGrath. It was Liam Brady. It was Mick McCarthy. It was Robbie Keane. And there was others along the way.
You didn't mention Richard Dunne. Richard Dunne would have been the full
house. Yes, yes, yes.
Exactly. Richard Dunne would have been the absolute, the cherry on top of that list of Irish players. But Stephen Kenny was clearly annoyed by that comment. He was clearly frustrated by it. He mentioned it to the players in the dressing room. And
we played that clip earlier on where he was throwing shade on the sports psychology of the Luxembourg manager.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And whether or not that played into the Irish players or not, I don't know. Benny and Josh Cullen were basically saying that, you know, they didn't need that to get motivated for this game, that they have their own internal motivations for it.
Yeah. I'd say the players are less interested in that in some ways than, like, it's definitely Kenny's thing from the start. And it goes to the Andy Farrell quote earlier on about, like, we are skillful. Yeah. We can believe in ourselves. Like, we are skillful. And I look, that's why I think this job is important. That's why I think Kenny is actually going to be a very important figure in the history of Irish football. If it failed, it's going to be very difficult for somebody else in that system to come and get that gig again. That's my point on that.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, Ger. You OTBAM have Kelly Harrington on later on the show. She is one of two Irish female boxers in Katie Taylor, who will go down as two of the best female boxers of all time. Jason Quigley is fighting for a world title later on this month. Two Irish players and an Irish captain in the European team of the Ryder Cup this year. Irish rugby have just beaten the All Blacks. We have talent within this country. And why can we say that all these sports that we've thrived in across the world, we can't do that with the most participated sport in the country? We can do it because we do have the talent. And I think more than just, you know, I don't want to overblow what the performance was last night. It wasn't a good performance for 60 minutes of the game, but moreover, it's about the pride within the jersey that Stephen Kenny is bringing back, because Trapattoni did something to the psyche of this nation when it came to the football. And it was him that started that seed that Irish players cannot and should not try to play football.
Liam Brady was in the dressing room. Liam Brady was in that dressing room for a long period of time.
Yeah.
He
exactly,
bore witness,
yeah.
And then when he stopped being in the dressing room, he went on the telly and defended Trapattoni and defended the tactics and defended how we were playing after really, really bad performances. Brady would be like, nothing to do with the manager, like just a, you know. So it's interesting to see how this, how the turntables have turned.
The public moved away from that as well. I don't think you can get away with that anymore. You can't on the one level watch Ireland beat New Zealand and play unbelievable rugby and then expect to have the same grow for the Irish team if they're like trying to get a nil-all draw by putting their backs to the wall in international football. But I tell you what, I mean, the boy Holt has fairly gotten the Irish journalists going in. That was so passionate.
Yeah,
and it's like, we're better than this. It's almost like all the Irish journalists at the press conference got together and were like, this is, you know, we're representing our country here. We're gonna call you Mr. Interpreter.
And
well, you see, just one last point on the pride side of things. There's a good documentary that's just dropped on Copa 90. They do documentaries. And they spent the summer with the Scottish fans for the Euros last year or 2 years ago. No, it was last year, 2021, sorry. And essentially, look, Scotland are on a different journey because Steve Clark is a pragmatist who doesn't play nice football, but he's getting results. But what he did as well was restore pride in the Scottish jersey. What he did was bring fans back who had stopped watching Scotland altogether because they suddenly had a team that were getting results, that were winning, and that they could be proud about again. And I think there's a lot of parallels with this Irish side that I know people who don't watch Ireland anymore because it was just so dreadful to watch over the last 10 years. And they started to watch it again. Friends of mine who don't watch the League of Ireland, didn't really know who Stephen Kenny is, didn't know what he was going to do, have always repeatedly been texting throughout this campaign into the group chats, Ireland are playing really well here. Even if the result didn't follow, they're saying Ireland are playing really well here in a shocked way. So if that continues over the next couple of months, that's all I want. Ireland aren't going to win the World Cup. They're not going to win the Euros.
Hang on now.
What was the,
a good competitive side.
You're teaching us how to dream here. What was the gossip about the contract? Soon or is Liam Brady... Is somebody tipping Brady off that actually it might be 6 months before we get that deal done?
No, one of the funniest parts of the contract conversation was when Josh Cullen was in front of the media and he was asked about the contract situation. And he said, well, I haven't been asked specifically myself by someone in the FAI whether I want Stephen Kenny to stay on, but he does want Stephen Kenny to stay on. The whole squad wants Stephen Kenny to stay on. The word seems to be that it's going to be the end of the month, regardless of when the end of the campaign. It's probably going to be that November meeting, which is coming in, I think it's the 23rd of November this month is when the decision is going to be made. But all the signs seem to be that it's going to be a Stephen Kenny new deal to take us into the Euro campaign.
All right, good stuff, Enda. Thanks very much. Safe home. Cheers.
Cheers, lads.
It's Enda on his way back from Luxembourg. Very quickly, I'm going to tell you about this. Arsenal and Ireland fans don't want to miss our next Carbery FC roadshow. We're going behind the scenes with the Arsenal invincible Robert Pires and Gunner star and Ireland captain Katie McCabe. We'll also be joined by former Arsenal S&C coach and Ireland rugby legend Gerry Flannery. It's all with thanks to Carbery FC and their club partnerships, granting you behind the scenes access at the Premier League's biggest clubs, coming soon to OTB Sports social channels. We'll be recording that next Friday, so it's going to be pretty interesting. Very quickly, going to run you through the newspaper headlines here. And obviously, the Ireland team, we can start with that. Ireland's cohesive performance is evidence things have changed for the best. What more can Stephen Kenny do as Ireland manager? It's a clear goal that has been disallowed. Stephen Kenny after the Portugal draw and Ireland versus Portugal player. And that's just our football section. The front page of the Irish Times this morning. Third time is a charm as Ireland poked the bear once again. This is... one of the things that happened was that New Zealand got very angry with the fact that we beat them and then they hammered us in the World Cup. That was, we spoke with Gregor Paul on the show last week and he was like, the World Cup was a big emotional thing for the All Blacks because you'd beaten them twice before that. So
how did the Irish Times lead with rugby 2 days later when Ireland just beat Luxembourg? I mean, it's old habits die hard. Like, maybe they should have. I think the football team deserves, what with it being on a Sunday, deserved to be on the front page. Where did they get them in?
That's the side lead.
No photos. Photos in every other paper of the Irish football team, like even on the front.
Maybe I've got an early edition, do I?
No, I think so.
It looks good, boss, is the Irish Daily Mirror's headline.
We poked a bear.
It's Keith Andrews, obviously, alongside Stephen Kenny. Future's bright, future's orange. It's an ad campaign from the 90s, right?
That's right.
Orange Telecom in the UK. I never got the joke because I only had two channels. But that was their tagline for ages. Kenny's spine is there for us to have top team, and it feels like it's true.
Ah, yeah, Irish Times front page and the actual paper.
So there you go. Are you making peace with the Irish Times?
Yeah.
Yeah, front page of the actual newspaper there. It's is that the Duffy goal? It is Duffy celebrating.
What a kind of a Duffy header as well. He kind of like, he almost had to direct it back across goal and nearly came back out again, but somehow went in. And I think then we went 1-0 up. We're like, yeah, we'll definitely win this game now.
Oh, Benny happy with Irish job is the headline in the Herald, finishing on a high. That's the front of the Examiner this morning. And I did have a tab of the morning. I did. Oh, I do. Yeah. Hit it.
Well, how do you do?
Tab of the morning.
Orange is the new crack. You don't get it?
Nice, you don't. That's...
Orange is the new black. A popular television show. Wow, tumbleweird.
Not sure about that jersey, to be honest.
Come on, Danny.
Was it Neil O'Riordan was saying that beautiful blue jersey that we had. Could we not go with one of them for...
The beautiful blue jersey is like a thing of beauty. And I definitely think that they should be so three jerseys, home, away and the blue, and just keep them now for the next couple of years and everybody will be very happy. Obviously there'll be new ones when the new sponsor comes out.
One other thing, not to overplay it, Tony O'Donoghue spoke to Gavin Bazuna in the pre-match interview about this, the Nigerian heritage of some of the players in the squad. So I had to, I was just thinking of this afterwards, like St. Patrick's Day in America is like a big, big deal. So it's like, when is Nigeria's National Day? It turns out it's the 1st of October.
Right,
we missed it. Which is when they got their independence from Britain in 1960, I think. And I mean, getting independence from Britain is something we can kind of relate to. So we have to turn the 1st of October
into a bank holiday.
Well, into a, like a, let's celebrate.
They're going to give it to St. Bridget's Day, which isn't a great time of the year. It's February. Do we even need to
back from dry January sort of stuff?
Maybe.
Like the role that sons of Nigerians are having already for this football team is absolutely insane. We might be producing the best player we've ever had. I'm not trying to big them up too much, but like, this is insane. And you guys out there who might be part of this Nigerian Dublin community or Nigerian Irish community, start asserting the fact that we have to celebrate like the 1st of October as one of our national days, because we're just becoming a much, much better football
team.
Good
time of year. The weather will always be good.
Yeah.
This is important when we're thinking about our bank holidays.
Yeah, and Ogbeni, he's such a, he's just that Cork drawl and the big smile, and he's such a positive character. And again, his progress from your guy who's playing wing back in League One to be playing as well as he has over the last couple of games.
You really hope that they can just, like, if he could play championship football week in, week out, like, there's a really good temperament there where he recovered, I thought, from a poor opening 10 minutes. And even in the game against Luxembourg, there was a little bit of uncertainty at various stages. But to recover from that and consistently be, okay, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to attack, and I'm going to make sure that every time I attack, my opponent is physically going to feel it, and they're going to be worried about what I'm going to do. It's just, I think it's good to have that. So, right.
Absolutely.
8:51 this morning, OTBAM is brought to you by Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. Alan Quinlan is with us. Alan, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, lads. How are you?
Getting carried away, Alan. We're getting carried away. We're enjoying life. We're enjoying being sports fans. We're enjoying being at full stadiums. And we're enjoying beating the shit out of the All Blacks.
Yeah, I think there's obviously going to be, we've probably been here before, and are we going to get carried away?
Yes, let's get carried away. Why not? Are we not allowed to get carried away? Is that not the whole point of life, to feel alive?
Yeah, I think, look, obviously what happened a couple of years ago and on the back of winning a Grand Slam, summer tests in Australia and then beating New Zealand, we started off 2019 with that disappointing and comprehensive loss to England and Dublin, and that spelled a lot of negativity that year, which culminated in a disappointing end to the World Cup. So I suppose looking at a lot of stuff online and even people on social media and people who most very obviously don't care but don't like rugby either, they all seem to be bringing up the fact that it's a friendly and we're getting carried away. I've said this before, there's no such thing as friendlies in test matches. And if that was a friendly match, and there's no trophies there, there's World Cup points, rankings on the line. And you'll have that bit of negativity. And I even heard my colleague Shane Coleman on News Talk Breakfast this morning, and he's adamant that it was a friendly and that we're all getting carried away.
He's a soccer man, though. You want to be careful of Shane.
But I don't know what we're supposed to do, Jerry. You know what I mean? I was involved in a number of Irish teams who got trounced by New Zealand, and we went close a few times down in New Zealand. They're the best team consistently, best international rugby team ever. Consistently, they're right up there at the very, very top. And we're a pretty small rugby nation. None of us expected this in the last couple of weeks, given that Ireland have only played, you know, they did only one test match before this. And like, and I said this in 2018, none of the players or Joe Schmidt or anyone internally started shouting and roaring saying we're going to win a World Cup. We put ourselves in a very, very good position, and things didn't go well for us.
Yeah.
And that's just a reality. So look, I don't know, are we allowed to celebrate? Are
yes.
we allowed to be happy?
Yes, we are. I think
should we bow down to the negativity of some people who
I think one of the things that people who like rugby should do is ignore the people who don't like rugby, who are generally trying to just troll them. That's the point. It's like here's a few little buttons that I can press to annoy people and to rain on their parade, because it's a very Irish thing. Is like, you're having fun over there.
It's a very Irish thing.
Too much fun.
Yeah, and it's I said this so many times before. I watched the soccer team last night with great enthusiasm. I grew up watching. Euro 88, special memories for me when Ray Houghton scored, Italia 90, all that stuff. And I was, am I a rugby man? Most probably, because that's the career I went down and the path I went down. But
you're more rounded.
I love the other sports. Pardon?
You're more rounded than that.
Well, I love the GA as well. And I have friends, GA friends, who complain and give out about the rugby coverage. Does it get hyped up a bit? Yeah, for sure. But like, the reality is, I love all sports, and
like from the moment that Liam Griffin christened hurling the Riverdance of sport, like Cheltenham is the Olympics of horse racing. All sports. That's like. It's supposed to be a diversion from the fact that the world is burning. And
exactly.
People have this
narrative that it's just entirely private schools. There's a lot of private schools players play for Ireland, but I didn't. I came through the club system. So I think I can argue the point that I never had an issue with snobbery in the game. And was I frustrated at times when I wasn't picked in Irish under 21 teams and stuff like that? But the reality is that it is what it is. Some people want to knock the victory, and I probably felt for the first time ever, which is something that we're getting used to, I suppose, in winning a test against New Zealand. I felt a bit guilty about kind of being celebrating and being happy, because I was kind of tempering the situation on Saturday night.
I think that's so. There's two things, right? We won a line out with 76 and a half minutes on the clock, and the crowd started going ole ole ole, and I was like, too soon, just as Rob Herring gets pinged for not throwing it in fast enough, and like, oh Jesus, this could end horribly. So that dread of losing is always there. And then as soon as we won, we all turned to each other and went, yep, peak too soon again. So like, of course
I gotta ask Quinny a question here. These are just looking at these stats. Is this staggering to you that you read the Irish Independent of a Monday and you read stats like this? Territory, Ireland 65%, possession in opposition 22, 36.9 versus 13, total passes exactly double, 212-106. This tackles made 238 by the Kiwis, 101 from Ireland. This is insane.
Yeah, we killed them.
Yeah, they're insane stats. And look, I was doing speaking, obviously, to people last week, and one of the alarming stats that jumped out that in their 13 tests this year, they've scored 96 tries and 675 points. It's the most by any international team in the calendar year. So people are saying, well, we beat New Zealand. I was like, those stats were jumping out to me, 96 tries in 13 games. Now, two of them were against Tonga and the USA, where they broke the 100-point mark. But it was probably the most comprehensive and controlled and dominant performance we've ever seen from an Irish team against New Zealand. I think at times it just goes to show how good they are and can be when they had just sporadic moments in the game. Cody Taylor's try was a mistake at the back of the line-out. Will Jordan then comes up with a bit of individual brilliance with the chip and scores a try. There's always that feeling and nervousness. But, Johnny, you're right. 241 tackles, Ireland made 103. It's just alarming. They only won 56 rucks, New Zealand. I don't think anyone they've ever played, even when they've been beaten by England in that World Cup or beaten at times by South Africa, had they that little amount of possession and winning rucks for themselves. So it was an alarming stat.
The bit about allowing yourself to celebrate, it is because we are obsessed as a country with World Cup. That is baked into our rugby culture now because of the way that we've decided that head coaching decisions are based on success or failure in the World Cup. And I think it's right to have that little bit in your head for the future, that there's, you know, that is always going to be there. But at the same time, to really enjoy the fact that Caelan Doris and Furlong and Sexton and James Ryan all played in the same team, fully fit, I think potentially for the first time really ever, that they had played a big game where they were all fully fit and all in reasonable form. I don't remember Andy Farrell having that opportunity yet, and they all played pretty close to their potential. And I think that's the thing that gets rugby fans excited, and they should be excited by that.
Yeah, I think, like I said, it was such a comprehensive performance. You know, Ronan Kelleher, for me, he's just been such a brilliant find. What an outstanding player. And having Porter himself and Furlong, they're world class. They can be world class. To be very careful what I say here, because people will take these comments and say, well, we're going to win the World Cup now, and I said this. But Andrew Porter, Kelleher and Furlong, that's as good if right up there with the best front rows in the world. It's not just their scrummaging. It's their ball-carrying ability. It's their ability to be so physical, to win collisions, to stop the opposition, the work rate. Caelan Doris, Jack Cohn and Van der Fleer were sensational in the back row. Gibson Park had a superb game as well. I thought he was really outstanding. And yeah, I was just kind of in awe with the way they played and the ambition and the wit. And you've got to give Mike Catt credit. He's come under a lot of pressure and a lot of criticism in the early parts of Andy Farrell and,
the Telegraph.
And Simon Easterby.
Yeah, well, the Telegraph referred
Simon
to it
Easterby as well
as Mike Catt's Mona Lisa. The other thing the Telegraph have done is they're the ones who are pissing on our chips this morning, because Farrell's star rising and England return is real possibility is how they're reporting on this. Now, I think they're just trying to suck their readers into reading it, because in this is Tom Carey, who was at the Aviva. He makes the point that Ireland must travel to New Zealand for 3 tests next summer where their progress will be tested. But right now, it's really hard to imagine the former Rugby League Man of Steel not being at or near the top of any RFU wish list. I mean, they already have a coach. But anyway, whether he would be tempted given how things ended 5 years ago and given the project he has his teeth firmly into is another matter. So, I mean, I'm going to take that with my usual pinch of Telegraph salt. But at the same time, get your hands off, buddy. Screw you. We're the one who picked him up and said, yeah, come on. Gave him somewhere to cut his teeth as an international head coach, and it's bearing fruit.
Yeah, well, look, he's done a very good job. I think at the start it took him time, and he's assembled a good coaching team. Mike Catt, as I said, he deserves credit for what happens, and maybe the evolution we've seen at the end of the Six Nations. Simon Easterby, the defence was outstanding. I think they were just... They looked like a team that really knew what they wanted to do, and they played with a freedom and at times off the cuff, but their accuracy was superb. And I think that's probably player-driven as well to get to this point. And the only chance you have of winning these type of games is to be brave and ambitious. And, you know, when you see the penalties early on, the first penalty of the game was very kickable and Sexton goes to the corner. It's very risky, but it kind of showed the mentality that they had to go for this, and they kept going for, you know, for 80 minutes. And people, the word peaked. Have we peaked too early? Are we peaking at the wrong time? You can't decide when you peak. I think Andy Farrell he's probably capped up close up to 20 players since he's taken over, or me even more. There was 11 over the summer. There was probably 12 or 14 before that, I think was the number. So it's probably up over 20. So he's tried to change the cycle and find new players and get new people in there. Have we issues around 10 depth there? Yes, for sure. Gibson Park has come in at scrum half.
Yeah.
But you don't just peak. You don't decide to peak. You try and win matches in front of you.
Let's tease out Gibson Park, right? Because Gibson Park wasn't first choice at Leinster. He was actually second choice. So it was kind of 50-50 in the big games. But it was trending towards him not being first choice. And they've decided that he's going to be in their squad all the time. And they stuck with him. And they've been really rewarded by the two best performances I've ever seen Jameson Gibson-Park give in the Japan game. And then he backed it up by being able to do fairly similar stuff against the All Blacks, which suggests he's taken his game to a new level. That's down to the Irish coaching ticket. James Lowe, I think the general consensus was, oh, he's got to come out of the team because the defence is too much for liability. Yeah, bollocks, as he referred to everybody out there talking about his D in the aftermath on Channel 4, which was hilarious and also very endearing. They stuck with him and they got their rewards for it. So, like, they're brave when it comes to making decisions and they're not listening to what's going on outside. They obviously clearly have players in their heads. For me, that's a sign of a coaching ticket who is very ambitious about what they're trying to achieve.
I would say so, yeah. But look, they've got to be careful themselves. I don't think they'd be pleased with what James Lowe said after the game. I know he's a bit of a free spirit and stuff like that, but whatever about criticising the media for challenging him, and rightly so, they challenged him. So I don't know why he's kind of getting so frustrated and kind of bringing that point up, because he made some real defensive errors. Of course, he's done way working on it for 6 months, and that's fine. And he'll get the credit for that, and he's got the credit for that. The thing I didn't like was when he mentioned South Africa and the way the game should be played, because someone needs to remind James Lowe that we play South Africa in the World Cup in 2 years in the pool. And I can guarantee you, Jacques Nienaber and Rassie Erasmus will find that comment. And will
I missed
use
that.
It.
I missed that. What did he say?
He said that we're playing the game the way it should be played, not like South Africa. The spirit of the game and the way the game should be played. You know, you have to be very careful when you bring any other countries into it. And I don't think the Irish management will be pleased with that. I wouldn't be pleased with it. But look, he is a free spirit. It's not a big issue. But
they called us softies, though. We've got the videotape of being called softies by them. So, you know, there's material on both.
Well, I never liked giving any sort of ammunition to any team and people. You've got to back it up, and maybe he will back it up in 2 years of the World Cup. But look, it's a long way away. Going back to what I was saying about peaking, what this team needs to do now, and I think Sexton said it, is they need to get better. They're going to lose matches along the way. You know, they go to England and France and the Six Nations. Could we have bad performance? Of course, there's always a potential there that you're going to get on the day, you're going to get beaten. I think he's got to try and keep developing the game. I think the problem maybe at the World Cup was that we probably didn't have a plan A, B or C in the tank. That it doesn't matter if you can revert to type and kick the litter off the ball in wet conditions or grind out a result, that's fine. But having the ability to attack like the team did at the weekend and evolving that and making that better and better. And there's an athleticism to this team, because you just look at Doris and Cohn and the football ability they have. And like I said, the front row. So he's capped a lot of players. I don't think we should get carried away, because I do think that certain teams will look at that game now, England and France will look at it and they'll take, you've got to really, and a lot of the time rugby is about those collisions and about the physicality up front. And
yeah.
If you really get stuck into the opposition, you can stop them. And, you know, when that happens to Ireland, how are they going to cope? How are they going to cope on a day where the line-out kind of goes a little bit awry, where they get smashed on the gain line and they have to start kicking a little bit again? And they're the ones that in the last couple of years have brought a lot of the negativity.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of matches against England. So it's about trying to get better, not peaking, just trying to get better and add one or two players along the way. I think it was a brilliant performance and they deserve an awful lot of credit for what happened.
Yeah, we should enjoy it when it happens, because the future, who knows? It could be grim. They might hammer the crap out of us in a World Cup quarterfinals. But we'll always have this night.
And the reality, Ger, is if we come out of that group and go to a quarterfinal, we're playing New Zealand or France.
Yeah.
You're playing France on home soil, or you're playing a New Zealand side who they can change 10 players in a couple of weeks, and there could be 10 different New Zealanders there next summer for the test, and they could be just superstars, phenomenal athletes. So it isn't about peaking and making a decision to peak at the wrong time. It's a lot of rubbish, that. It's just about this team trying to get resilience and being pretty consistent now in the next 2 years. And like Brian Cody has done with Kilkenny for so long, one or two players, changing them year on year and making sure that you freshen things up all the time and you keep people on their toes. Yeah. I think that's the challenge now for Andy Farrell.
All right. Quinny, good stuff. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks, lads.
Alan Quinlan giving us his thoughts there on Ireland's 29-20 win against the All Blacks. If you're just watching that on the YouTube, remember that you should hit subscribe and turn on notifications, and then anytime we update our rugby channel, you'll get to hear about it. It is 9 minutes past nine this morning here on OTBAM, brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Sorry. Proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. We're going to speak with Kelly Harrington in a moment, but I want to tell you two things. Norwich have officially confirmed what was a bit of an open secret for the last 24 hours. Dean Smith, the last week Aston Villa manager, this week Norwich manager, has been confirmed as the new manager of Norwich. You can read more about that on the OTB Sports app. Here's what's coming up on OTB Sports Radio today at 1 o'clock. It's OTB Gold, inside Pádraig Harrington's gaff, Cribs OTB style. State of the Union with Keith Wood at 3 o'clock. The split season documentary is a GA documentary from 4 o'clock. At 6, OTB Gold is Lance Armstrong. We're going to take a quick break. Next, Olympic gold medalist Kelly Harrington joins us live.
OTB AM.
All right, it is 11 minutes past nine. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Olympic gold medalist and newly announced SPAR ambassador Kelly Harrington. SPAR today announced a 3-year partnership with the lightweight world champion and will support Kelly every step of the way on her journey to the 2024 Paris Olympic Games. As part of the partnership, SPAR and Kelly Harrington launched the SPAR Christmas Community Fund. It's an initiative where SPAR want to reward and acknowledge 10 local community mentors by giving them the chance to win €1,000 for their club. For more details and to nominate your local community mentors, visit spar.ie. Kelly, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah,
how
pretty
you
doing? Pretty good. Pretty good. Not a bad weekend of sport from an Ireland perspective. What stage are you at the moment? Are you training for anything specific? Is there something on the horizon for you?
So we were training for the World Championships. They were to happen in December. We were to head out to Turkey on the 19th of November and come back then on the 19th of December when the championships were done and stuff. But they've been cancelled due to COVID and stuff. So, so that's been cancelled until next year. So we were training for that. It was kind of a welcome kind of cancellation for me this time round. So, I kind of need a bit of a break, and I went straight back in at 100 miles an hour into training after a bit of a break, and my body kind of got run down because I went back in thinking that I could just get back in where I had left off, but that's not the case, as you know yourself, and I got a bit run down and so on. But here we are again. I'll be able to work on things that you're not really able to work on in a team environment, if that makes any sense. So I come up with my own coach now in the club, Noel Bourke, and work on little small things like my footwork and strength and stuff.
Yeah, that's really interesting to hear that the break was required at this point as well, because it must be difficult to know what to do after you've climbed a mountain. A lot of people talk about when they actually end up achieving the thing that they've put their whole life into achieving, that it's just difficult to get back to what normality is after that, because it's kind of like just a bit of a come down. Did you feel any of that so far?
You know, like, to be honest with you, it's crazy because I haven't really trained. I am training more than half my life with boxing, but I suppose for the Olympic Games, and I've said it over and over again, I never really thought that I never thought that I'd ever actually get to the Olympic Games or try and go to the Olympic Games up until 2016. So it's not like I had trained for the Olympic Games forever. So I suppose when I came around and I've won the Worlds, the Europeans and the Olympics, it's kind of all been a shock to me, rather than like I've trained my whole life for this. It's kind of like, oh my god, like, how did I do that? And I suppose I never really went up to come back down, but the thing that I am finding at the moment is I'm having a bit of a break. I'm not going to say meeting loads of people or anything, but I'm meeting a couple of friends and eating loads of finding it hard to get back into the routine of getting back on track. But as well as that, there isn't a goal at the moment because the world has been wiped, and so I don't really have anything to aim for at the moment. So it's just, there is nothing there really at the moment for me to get back for, if that makes any kind of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And can you enjoy that?
As in, like, what do you mean, like,
Well, just like the uncertainty of not having something specific to train for, it kind of gives you a bit of a free pass to relax and not be killing yourself. Like, you know, to be at the elite level that you're at, you kind of have to have this constant internal drive going, Jesus, I shouldn't really have this food, or I need to get sleep, or I need to make sure I'm resting and doing my recovery and all that kind of stuff. But actually not having that.
I'm laughing because you sound like you've been in my head the last while. do you know what? You feel that when you have a break, you feel like, Jesus, I've had too long of a break. I need to get back, you know. But for the first time, I'm not bad to myself. I don't treat my body badly. I don't drink alcohol or anything like that. So,
okay, we're just having some trouble with the Zoom there. It was one of those stereotypical early Skypes where it's just good enough.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
It's not good enough, so we're going to try and get it back.
Sometimes you forget that, you know, we didn't used to be like this, and, you know, it's just the last sort of year and a half we've had all these, you know, delays are kind of normal, and it's like, it's great to be back in studio on that and to do things the old way, or, you know.
I know, yeah. We've got Kelly Harrington back with us. Kelly, sorry about that. The line is much better. We can hear you now. You were just saying that the on-off again thing and being able to relax into it and enjoy it was difficult. How is that going for you? Sorry, we may pick it up there.
Yeah, I was saying that, and it is difficult, the on-off, on-off, but now I know I don't have anything, I think, until March. So I am going to enjoy my Christmas. I've been listening to the podcast, the Dan Carter podcast, and like sometimes you listen to these podcasts and you start to panic thinking, oh my God, I should be doing this, you know. But do you know what? You should be doing what's right for you, and everyone is individual. So I think, like, I need that. You need to switch off, and I am switching off now for the Christmas. I'm letting myself go. When I hear them voices in my head, like what you were saying, should I be doing this? Should I be eating this? I'm going to say, no, do you know what? F it, Kelly, because you deserve it. You've worked hard. You have barely took a break since 2016, and now is the time when you can take a break. But as soon as the new year kicks in, that's it. You're the wheels are in motion again, and then you have to knock all those cakes on the head.
You turn 32 on the 11th of December, is that right?
Yeah.
What's the plan?
32 years young.
Yeah, what's the plan?
I don't have a plan, to be honest. Sir, look, who knows, can you even make a plan anymore with all this that's going on in the world? I've missed my 30th, I've missed my 31st, and I'll probably just eat cake I am going on Second Captain's Live, actually, on the 11th, I think, and Zora is coming on with me as well, so that should be fun.
Yeah, and I'm obviously not a big boxing fan, Kelly, but like, where are you coming from this now? Because you've achieved this you've achieved this greatness at this stage of your life, but like, do you see this as the start of something, or is this the peak, or like, I guess does that, you don't want to be remembered for this one thing either.
Come here, and I tell you, just on what you said lastly there, if it is this one thing that I am remembered for, I'm happy enough with it, because there's not a lot of Olympic champions out there,
so anyway.
I'll just correct you on that.
Fair play.
But I do get what you're saying as well, but I've always just gone with the flow. I never kind of expected that I'd become an Olympic champion. It was always going into the qualifiers. It was like, if I qualify, I qualify. If I don't, at least I've went in and I've given absolutely everything that I have. I'm a giver of everything I have when I put my mind to something. And, you know, if it doesn't happen, at least I can walk away and say, I did give absolutely everything, and that's all that you can do. And what's next for me now is just to knuckle down, to get back fit. And I'm a target now, and I just have to try and stay on top of that, and, you know, like, try and do whatever I can do and not worry about anything else in the world. And I know people are going to have all these kind of expectations of me, and, oh, she done this, she done that, she lost this, she lost that, you know, but I'm just going to be me and keep being me and keep my mindset the way it is, and that's all you can do, really.
Are you back in the hospital then, are you?
I was back, and then obviously the world was coming up, so I had to take some time, because it's very hard to train Monday to Friday flat out, and, you know, go in on the weekends and then straight back into another week from Monday to Friday. So I had took it off, but now I'm back, now that the Worlds are cancelled again. And just a shout out to all the women in my job. If they weren't there covering me back while I'm out training, then I wouldn't have a job to go back to, you know. So I'm very, very appreciative of those ladies who are covering me all the time. They're absolutely brilliant.
Kelly, one of the things that is going to be different is that you know you're going to Paris, right? That's your plan now for the next period of time. And you also have credit in the bank as a gold medalist. So I wonder, does that change your approach? Do you feel like you have to hit the same markers the whole way along the way? Or actually, should you be more strategic and maybe take a good chunk of time off to let your body rest and heal and then come back at it again? Like, there's definitely a bunch of different ways that you could try and peak for Paris.
Yeah, well, that was it. I was kind of worried about the Worlds coming up because people seem to forget that we had the qualifiers just in June and then the Olympics then obviously in August. So they were quite like close to each other and I peaked for both of them. And when the Worlds were coming up and meant to be in December, I was kind of thinking, oh my God, how am I going to do this again? Like, I've already done it twice this year. It's going to be quite hard. And then I was worrying if that had happened come 2022, like we'd have a Europeans and I'm thinking, oh my God, like I'm not a machine, you know. So it was now at the moment the coaches have been like, we've had to sit down and we've had to talk of, we have to be selective in what we do because I'm not getting any younger either, and it is harder to recover. Like all those younger athletes out there, you see them, they could fight every day of the week and they're recovered every second day. Like, it's just crazy, but it takes me longer to recover now. Obviously I'm getting older, but the better you look after your body, the more you recover. But we are going to be looking at, you know, obviously not going 100 miles an hour, slowing the pace down and picking competitions to go to, but picking them wisely and trying to obviously think of the long run, that the goal is to qualify for Paris. And that's, you have to trust in the process, because not all the time going forward everything's not going to run smoothly. And I'm not going to be, but it's hard to win every fight, really, you know. So realising that there is going to be new competition out there, it's about feeling it out in some of the smaller competitions, if I get a chance to go to them, if that's what the coaches are going to send me to, I can lose a fight, but if I do lose a fight, it's absolutely not the end of the world, and I'll learn from it, and needing to test the water as well, because so many new young fresh blood out there, really.
Yeah, of course. And as you said, you've got a target on your back. Who's in your camp? Who's in your corner? Who are those conversations with?
Well, my club coach, Noel Burke, and then Zora Antia, John Conlon, and Dimitri Dimitruk, Owen Pluck, and Damien Kennedy, they're all looking after us. But the physiologist as well, Damien Martin, he's obviously he's looking after the physical end of it, really, you know, like the body, how the body's working, how I'm recovering and stuff. So he's monitoring all of that, and they can work off that then, you know, whether, right, yeah, she's actually recovering really, really well, we can send her to this, or no, we'll hold her back because she needs more recovery time, or we'll send her to this camp, we won't send her, you know,
yeah,
stuff like that. So they all go hand in hand. Like, people don't, you wouldn't really think it, but every day everyone is working together. The strength conditioning coach as well, John Cleary, like, he's, everyone works together hand in hand, and everybody has, and then I have a little say in what I do.
And you spoke about Johnny Sexton, you know, his performance is still for Ireland. What's the optimum kind of age for a lightweight boxer, like, and could you still be getting better?
I feel like I am getting better. I feel like I'm adding to me game, really. But I think, personally, I think when you stop thinking outside of the box and you stop wanting to get better and you relax, then that's when you stop getting better. But I want to get better. I want to improve. And with the right people around me, I can improve. And that's not just like people saying, oh, you're going to get better. I'm talking about like the physiologist who's actually reading your body for you. And, you know, like, I do think I can get better. I'm not saying I'm going to come out and I'm going to be a different machine altogether. But those little 1% that make the make a massive difference.
Has the phone line gone as well?
Are you there?
Yeah, we're here. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you're back again. Yeah. Yeah. And that those 1% that make a difference, obviously, hugely important. I've got to ask you, Kelly, about this competition that is running with Spar, because I think one of the things that was very clear from the celebrations was that yours is a grassroots success, that it comes about because there was somebody in your local boxing club, and you know, you were representative of the community as well. It's interesting that that's what this prize is for. It's for small clubs around the country. It's for anybody who needs a little bit of support, and €1,000 is actually going to make a difference to these clubs.
100%, and like we've fallen on hard times at the moment. So, I mean, for anybody who has a good mentor or coach out there, and they want to, you know, they want to award the club as well, reward the club. You just have to nominate them, and I mean, you can't win if you're not in. So, I think every club should really enter. There is €1,000 up for grab. €1,000 up for grabs. So all you have to do is visit www.spar.ie to be in with a chance. Like, Spar has got over 400 shops in the local communities around Ireland. They're run independently, retailers, and most of which are families. So, I mean, if that doesn't say it all, that's what I stand for, is community. I love my community, and I think that Spar does a great job in the communities. And this is, I'm all over this Christmas Community Fund, because It's brilliant. It's absolutely class, and I'd love. I'm not a judge, by the way. I opted out of that one because I'd feel like I didn't want to be biased and giving it to clubs that I knew. So
or giving it to everybody. That's the other thing.
Yeah. I wish I could give it to everybody, but unfortunately, I can't.
And Kelly, that last thing I just wanted to ask you about, because obviously, you know, people who are connected in any way to sport would have seen your rise over the last number of years. But there's a crossover moment where the whole country is watching your fights. And I know you're in a bubble at the time when the fights are happening, and so you're probably not as aware of it. But that homecoming was clearly something that brought home to you just the impact that you'd had. Even the scenes afterwards when lads were dropping spuds up to your folks' house from on their way to Croker. Like, there was a bit of madness around that. Are you ready? Are you enjoying that part of actually everybody hanging on your every word, and you playing a leadership role in your community and even beyond that?
Yeah, like, I've always said, like, if you're in the limelight, if you have a voice, then you should use it, and you should use it for the good. Why would you use it for anything other than the good? I don't get that. And I feel like, I mean, I love honesty, and that's exactly what I am, is a very, very honest person. And I'm trying to, for me, coming from the community that I come from, and from my background, from a young age of going down the wrong pathway, I just want to be able to try and encourage others to reach out and go for their goals. And, you know, it doesn't have to be sport related at all. Like, you know, it can be anything, but for people to go for it, to just go for it and give it a shot, because, like, you'll never know unless you try whether you can, you know. And that's it. I'm ready to take that role on. I am taking that role on. I've took that role on before. Even before I became Olympic champion, I've been helping my community for a long time, and forever, really. It's just now that I have a gold medal that people are saying, oh yeah, you know, you're a role model now. But I class myself as a role model way before the Olympics.
Well, it's true, you are, and you've delivered in spades on that. And whatever about being known just for winning the gold medal, I think you're actually going to end up being known far more for being that role model, and it's an incredible thing that you've done. And long may it continue, Kelly. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Thanks very much, lads. Thank you.
That's Kelly Harrington there. A little dose of awesomeness into your life of a Monday morning. That make you feel good?
Yes, it's just absolutely inspirational. It'll be just interesting now. Sounds like she's kind of caught between, I really need to train here, but I'm also kind of enjoying myself. Just,
yeah, and I hope the enjoyment is the thing that wins that one, because there's plenty of time to be thinking about France. And, like, the only thing you'd be concerned about is Irish boxing is so riven with factions, and, like, it's so self-sabotaging and has been over the decades, that somebody's going to be, oh, you've got to qualify now, you're going to have to fight here, 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 here. And it's like, no, no. But they might do that because they haven't got a great track record of self-governance. Anyway, no point in us ruining that for now. OTBAM brought to you by Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. Have you ever grown a moustache?
No.
Now would be a good time, Johnny. There's still 2 weeks left. I know you love charity.
Yeah, I don't think it'd suit me, but yeah, you're rocking it well, Ger. Rocking it well.
Adam Kennedy says, fair play to Johnny for talking about rugby in a positive light, even though he has no interest in the sport.
I wouldn't say I have no interest. Like, it's, so I would have, I it annoyed me that I couldn't really watch the game on Saturday. A game like that, no, I'd love to watch, but I was on off the ball duty.
Literally, when I hear Kelly Harrington is on OTBIM, I have to text my mum, dad and Brian. If any of them miss her on it, somehow it'll be my fault, as they know I'll be listening, says Izzled on Twitter. I hope you enjoyed that then. And join us tomorrow morning from 7:30. I'll be back in studio talking rugby with Maddie Williams, much more as well.
OTB AM with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.